there have been signs of growing risk from two particular places. On one hand, central banks have begun to sound a bit more hawkish with regards to their monetary support, particularly the U.S. Federal Reserve, which is set to meet in a couple of days. And there's also some of these regulatory risks and uncertainties coming from mainland Chinese markets that's really started to raise questions about economic slowdown there and possible deleveraging risks from some of their key economic sectors. Well, today on Money FM 89.3, we're joined by Mr. Goh Rongren, who's the fixed income portfolio manager at Eastspring Investments. We'll get his thoughts on how this might be shaping their outlook in the medium to long term. Rongren, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are still safe and in good health during these very uncertain times. And welcome back to the show, sir.
Hi, JP. It's great to be here again, speaking with you.
It's been a very eventful last couple of weeks. There's no other way to put it. When you look at mainland China, we are seeing a lot of potential deleveraging risks, particularly for some sectors there, like the property sector. And also a lot of uncertainty right now with regulators in Beijing really starting to target those in the tech space out there. How have the events of the last few weeks impacted Eastspring's outlook now on Chinese and broader Asian fixed income?
So as you rightly pointed out, over the past 2 weeks, the markets have been focused on a couple of things. First, regulatory tightening, and secondly, on this whole property deleveraging, which is ongoing in China. So investors are understandably concerned that this would cause growth, which was already moderating in China at the start of the year, to actually slow even further. And as a result of this, the outlook on equities in China is actually quite cautious. But on the fixed income side, there are now expectations that Chinese authorities will calibrate the policy to support growth through liquidity easing measures. And in our opinion, this actually would be positive for Chinese government bonds. Mm. And one other thing I would add is that, you know, you have two biggest economic engines, the US as well as China, both seeing their growth slow down in the past month. So it's likely that monetary policy normalization is more likely to take place at a much more gradual pace, even in Asia. So this actually makes us a lot more comfortable with duration in Asian government bonds as compared to before.
All right. Rongren, you mentioned that it might be actually a long-term benefit or a plus, actually. But in the short term, there are signs that there might be some elevated signs of volatility, at least, that investors might have to deal with. How is Eastspring investment strategy evolving now, given all of this uncertainty and potential volatility? How are you tactically preparing yourself to deal with some of this uncertainty that we might see for the short term?
Yeah, certainly. So obviously the outlook right now is more cautious and more uncertain because we have no idea how far the Chinese regulators are going to take this regulatory tightening measures. And as a result of that, we are generally more cautious on credit right now. We go back to the basics. We continue to focus on high quality names with strong credit metrics. The names which would typically be able to ride out even the worst recessions. And we will actually be focusing on these names in our investments during this period of time. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, as with any market gyration, there would be pockets of value and opportunities that arise because, markets become overly pessimistic on areas which we find would be resilient enough to go through with this. And in that respect, we will be trying to buy on dips in this space.
Mm-hmm. Does duration play a factor here? Do you have preferences with regards to shorter or long-term at the moment? And would this happen in lockstep also with the potential short-term volatility that many are expecting at least?
Yeah, so I think when it comes to our choice of duration, I think, as I mentioned before, monetary policy is likely to be highly supportive in China because growth is definitely decelerating at quite a rapid clip. And there is a need from a policy perspective, to keep growth at least for this year and next year, at least for this year above 6% and for next year at least 5.5%. That means a lot more monetary policy support. And if that is the case, we are likely to see Chinese government bonds actually do very well in this environment. And let bear in mind that at the start of the year, there were fears that the PBOC was going to tighten monetary policy. And this was actually a negative for the government bonds. So now, conversely, we anticipate that with the easing measures, we would likely see a lot more demand for duration in government bonds in China.
Interesting. We're still meeting to Guo Rongren, who's the fixed income portfolio manager at eSpring Investments here in Money FM 89.3. Rongren, I want to shift our focus now to the big monetary policy event. And by the way, this week is going to be a very busy one in terms of central bank action and monetary policy, but perhaps none more important than the Federal Reserve, which is set to make their decision at early Thursday morning Singapore time. How big a deal is a potential tapering, though, with regards to Chinese and broader Asian bond markets? The Fed has signaled that they might be ready to at least lay out the groundwork for reducing their huge, massive bond buying program. But in the overall grand scheme of things, will this matter more for the U.S. Credit space versus, say, the credit space here in Asia overall?
Yeah, so in my opinion, the Fed's decision to taper has already been very well telegraphed. You know, it's almost been discussed to death since the middle of this year. Mm-hmm. So it's unlikely the markets will be taken by surprise, even if it were to be announced this week. But that being said, I think there is some expectation that the tapering announcement might be delayed towards the year end because recent U.S. economic data has been quite disappointing. So if the announcement were to come this week, we should see a mild surprise, which will lead to higher U.S. yields in the short term as a knee-jerk reaction. But I mean, if you look through all the short-term price action, right, what is probably equally important is that the signal sent by the Fed in their decision to taper is actually positive. It means that they actually have sufficient confidence in the strength of the economy to normalize policy from the extraordinary support during COVID. At the same time, they have also taken painstaking effort to emphasize that this is not policy tightening, it's just normalization. So investors should therefore read the decision positively, and by extension, we don't think that this should actually affect Asian fixed income markets negatively.
Mm-hmm. Rongren, as we mentioned, there's a myriad of potential risks, and markets have seen more jittery than usual. You don't have to just look at fixed income. Equity markets also showing similar signs of nerves for the most part. And whenever we calculate or try to take stock of potential risks, we do look at folks like yourself in the fixed income space for what risks are there to watch out for. What are some of the bigger risks now to the broader Asian bond space that you might be looking at, apart from the things we just discussed?
Yeah, so I mean, I will just mention the biggest risk right now. Right now, the biggest risk on every investor's mind is a sharp slowdown in China growth, which potentially could be caused by regulatory tightening and property deleveraging. I mean, this is the proverbial hard landing that, you know, every investor is most afraid of because it can trigger recessionary outcomes. So any retrenchment in risk sentiment arising from this will likely lead to a sell-off in risk assets, including Asian credit. So undeniably, investor confidence is actually quite low at the moment. And the reason is because no one is really sure how far policymakers will take regulatory tightening. I think there is hope because, you know, I believe that this government actually has a bottom line in growth targets and will stand ready to provide fiscal and monetary support if it's required to prevent a hard landing scenario. As I mentioned, I agree with this view, and I think that because of this, it remains a buy and dip environment. If you actually take a step back and look at the overall risk backdrop, it's still fairly favorable. I mean, we have been past peak growth, which is what occurred right in the immediate aftermath of COVID pandemic recession because we had massive fiscal support coming from all the governments. But as things slowly moderate and we go back towards normalization, right, then it's still generally a pro-growth environment. And so I don't think this is the right time to be taking chips off the table, so to speak.
All right. You know, Rongren, whenever we talk about ESG trends in Chinese credit markets. And of course, given the number of potential risk events that have come up, I have to ask you whether or not this has impacted ESG trends and development in the region for better or worse. Basically, Rongren, what lessons can we learn from an ESG standpoint, given everything that's happened and how busy and how tumultuous things have been over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, so I know that, you know, with every major event that rocks investor confidence, it typically will lead to a slowdown in some positive trends that are ongoing in that particular asset market. And as you rightly pointed out, you know, ESG before recent events has been the talk of the town. And certainly, I don't think the momentum ESG investing in China has waned in any way. It remains very much intact despite the headwinds we have observed in pockets of the China investment space. As you mentioned earlier, in tech and education. I think that from a policy perspective, the focus on climate-related investing remains a top national priority. Ever since, you know, President Xi Jinping actually made the commitments on carbon neutrality by 2060, the Chinese machinery, right, is all systems go when it comes to promoting green investments. And the government is actually trailing its resources behind green investing to actually meet these ambitious goals. So regulatory tightening is certainly happening in some sectors, but at the same time, regulatory support remains very strong in green sectors to facilitate their growth, as well as to enhance their contribution to decarbonization efforts. So this will include the sectors such as renewables, such as electric vehicles. I think this fact is not lost on investors, and certainly, you know, investors will waste no time in actually adding their chips right in this space, right, if the right value comes along. And I just wanted to add one additional interesting observation, right, on this whole ESG discussion. The Chinese government recently has been emphasizing a lot as part of their regulatory tightening efforts, as part of the intentions to achieve common prosperity. I'm sure you heard of this term right. Several times over the last few weeks. And, you know, it's really about improving the quality of life of majority of Chinese citizens to make sure that, you know, the growing wealth is actually more equally distributed and to foster a larger growing middle income class. So we can argue that the social uplift provided by the policies that we are seeing the last few weeks, right, is actually a positive ESG development.
Guo Rongren, fixed income portfolio manager at Eastspring Investments. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your schedule this Monday to join us on Money FM 89.3. As always, I wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these times. We look forward to next time we can have you back on the show.
Thanks, JP. Stay safe.